Yeah, don't get us wrong. There's still going to be plenty of randomness to the show.
Of course, that's the name football, of the show. The other name is off topic.
But this is football. What you want? We got it. Might be hard to listen, but it makes your rage glisten. Our voice is about the games. And you know we talk about the latest goings, more so than any other, and our Mountain West matters. Well, will you? You listen to this podcast too. And you rant about this podcast too. Just a side where Jeremy analyzes some matches and kiss the grin the bridges. We do some good interviews. And you know from Fresno all the way to Boise, from Logan down to Esty, they're calling out our name. Where will you? You listen to this podcast too.
We hope y'all listen to this podcast, because that's pretty cool. I'm not going to sing along. MWCConnection.com, that's our website. Mountain West Connection is the show. Jeremy Moss here with Matthew Kennerly. And can we make a promise tonight? We're going to do better than the Mountain West basketball teams did this evening on Tuesday night.
We promise we will put forth a better effort than those guys did.
So really quick, we're going to go off topic right away. Do you ever take a look at the Mid-Major Madness top 25 poll at all? They had a new one the other day.
Only on occasion.
Yeah, they've only had two, but I remember the first one came out and some guy was adamant about, hey, where's Fresno State? And me and Russell Steinberg are like, well, slow your roll. And then today I go, wasn't that funny when somebody wanted them ranked because they won the conference last year? Sorry to maybe basketball team's not good, but Prairie View A&M and now Bakersfield.
Yeah, they're doing nothing to ease the transition from football to basketball season over here.
But it's not just them though. We had a few other, but well, it's not a basketball show. But St. Mary's beat San Jose, not a surprise. Pacific beat Wyoming, not really a surprise. Purdue beat Utah State, whatever. Go Rebs! They crushed Northern Arizona.
Well, y'all are, you and Eli are still doing the basketball podcast, are you not?
We are. We're going to be back. We forgot this week was Thanksgiving, so it'll be next Thursday. So
I will leave that to you and him to, you know, figure out all the Fresno State basketball jokes that need to be made.
We will. If you want to write, give us a few, that'd be helpful. But, yeah, we'll take any help we can get. But we will have jokes because, really, Eli does the heavy lifting. I kind of lob him questions sometimes, I think. I know a little bit, but he's more of a hoops guy than me. He participates in the bracket matrix, so he knows what he's doing. But let's get to football here. Before we get to games, if you're listening, here's what you should do for the podcast. If you're at your family dinner this week, and you know things get out of hand, right? For sometimes,
inevitably,
listen to us instead of whatever contradictory opinion you have about whatever. Or stick one earbud in and pretend, be like, have you seen that J.J. Watt commercial about the new Bose headphones where he pretends to listen?
That's the move.
Just do that. Like, oh, yeah, I got you. When I turn around, you're doing whatever. So hope you're enjoying that turkey. Do you have a preferred stuffing method? Or do you call it dressing out there in California? What's the preference? Cause I know it's weird everywhere.
Stuffing.
Of course, always, yes, stuffing. So.
But, you know, for me personally, stuffing is stuffing is stuffing. I will eat it no matter how it is prepared.
I will as well, but don't give me stovetop. I'll eat it, but it's not like my favorite by any means.
You'll eat it, but you won't like it.
Well, it's tolerable. I'd prefer to make it myself. So
there you go.
I know you're not the big chef, I guess. Is that the right word to put it? Cooker?
I do cleaning.
There you go. I make it sometimes, but nobody in my family, well, my wife and their family, nobody likes it because I don't go home to Texas very often because it's far and expensive. And I'm like, I'm making all this for me. Sure, I'll have it for a week. Whatever. All right, so let's get to we'll get to football here. Before we get to games, let's discuss. I saw this coming a little ways ago, but there's kind of a doomsday scenario, or maybe not doomsday, but where we could poke fun and laugh at the college football playoff rankings again, because that's what it's about, right? Making them look silly.
Oh yeah.
So the rule is for the group of five, conference champion and highest rated. Mm-hmm. Well, the latest poll came out. Boise State still the highest rated, 19. Houston's at 20, which if you ever listen to the Audible podcast, it makes some good points. How is Oklahoma number 8, but Houston's 20?
That is an excellent question.
At least the difference is odd. But I guess that SMU loss really hurts you, Houston. But Boise's 19. Houston's 20. Houston's eliminated from the New Year's Six game because they cannot win the West Division of the AAC. That belongs to Navy, who are 25. Yet you have undefeated Western Michigan at 21.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you see where we're heading here now? What could happen?
Are we talking about scenarios in which the Mountain West comes out sitting pretty?
Let's start with that. So, as you and I know, I got a little argument on Twitter today because I do that sometimes. And we may bring up my little experiment I did the other day as well because that was hilarious. but somebody made a point that's technically true, but I'm still not a big fan of it. Boise State needs help to get on. So if we go for the Mountain West, which is not far-fetched, Wyoming plays New Mexico
mm-hmm.
on the road. And the Cowboys have lost 3 road games this year, so possibility they may not win. Wyoming loses, and Boise beats Air Force on Friday night or Friday afternoon. Boise moves to the title game. If they beat the Aztecs, they're in. Simple, right?
Yes.
Yet somebody tried to make an argument with me, which I get their point, but I think they're grasping at straws. They're like, oh, Western Michigan doesn't control everything. I'm like, well, I guess they're kind of right, just because if Wyoming loses, they don't. Because what their argument was, if Western Michigan wins out, they're still not guaranteed because of what else could happen. But I see a lot of ifs in that scenario about that, right? Because if Boise wins 2 games, if Wyoming loses a game, then Western Michigan. I still say Western Michigan's sitting pretty.
Well, especially since, you know, they get Toledo this coming week, and then, you know, they'll get Ohio. We know that now, if they beat Toledo and get to the MAC championship game. So while, you know, the MAC East isn't, you know, ideal, it isn't quite as strong as the West is, you know, being able to beat Toledo in that situation is a pretty significant feather in their cap that, you know,
Toledo's a good team. Toledo is a good team.
I've kind of said that all along, especially in our underdogs poll. I think I've been higher on them generally than most of our other voters.
Logan Woodside's a good quarterback.
Yes. But, you know, if Western Michigan can beat them, like, you know, the strength of schedule, which admittedly is kind of a concern because they do have 2 Power 5 wins out there in Kalamazoo. But, you know, Northwestern's okay and Illinois is
not
Illinois.
Okay.
Yeah, so, you know, Toledo might end up being kind of the best win they have all year, and that's a 9, possibly 10 win team, you know, considering the bowls and everything down the horizon. But, you know, if things break Boise's way, that's when things get interesting.
You know, here's what else is interesting, because I saw this earlier, because I've looked everywhere and I'm 98% accurate on this, because there's the issue about what about Army and Navy, because they play the week after
mm-hmm.
and that game's going to be included, because there's a little debate. Well, should Navy get the, if Navy's the team that gets the bid, should they get the bid no matter what, even though they have Army a week later? From all I can tell, I've looked around a lot of places. All I see is the stuff from about a year or two ago about Bill Hancock, now the former BCS director, now the playoff director, says that they'll wait till after the game, which screws a lot of bowl games up too, because that's December 10th. You have about, 4 or 5 bowl games that first week, especially Mountain West, a Vegas Bowl. You have the New Mexico Bowl, Idaho Potato Bowl. A lot of preparation goes away for a week, plus if fans want to travel, that's a mess by itself. But here's something that legitimately could happen, which I'll stop hogging the conversation here, but let me get at it really quick and then we'll go back and forth. But So here's what could really happen. Wyoming could win the Mountain West, not far-fetched by any means. They already beat San Diego State. They had to beat New Mexico. That could happen.
Mm-hmm.
Toledo, I don't think Toledo has, well, even Ohio, worst case, Ohio wins the MAC. But even if Toledo wins the MAC, they're still not as, you know what I mean? They're not up there. Even though we think they're pretty good, they're not to the level of Houston or Boise State or those teams, I would say. They're close, but not quite. They don't want that either. They'd rather have an undefeated Western Michigan team. And then you have not even two, like, here's the, I just thought of this just now, even more odd, because I'm sorry, I'm just kind of I thought about three things just now. Not just the Navy thing where, say, Navy wins a conference, then they lose to Army. You could have, like, Temple win the American Conference with three losses.
Mm-hmm.
Who the heck would get in?
That is the $64,000 question.
Is it Wyoming?
Well, I mean, I think it kind of depends on how things shake out, because let's assume even further that, you know, New Mexico beats Wyoming and Air Force beats Boise this coming.
Oh, even that. That's a possibility.
Then you start getting into really interesting scenarios where all three teams are at 6-2 and all three teams have one win against each other. And if you go to the Wikipedia page for the Mountain West Conference Football Championship game, there is a section about three or more team tiebreakers. So basically what it comes down to is number one, head-to-head. And then number two is the winning percentage among the teams within the division. So then you'd have to, you know, look at how they did against the other three teams in the Mountain, Colorado State and Utah State and...
Oh, no, sorry.
Max. No, right. No, it
Utah
would be...
Utah State, CSU. Who are we forgetting here? Air Force, there we go. Sorry, Falcons.
Air Force. Yeah, so off the top of my head, I wish I had researched this ahead of time. But that's basically your tiebreaker right there. And then if, for whatever reason, they have, you know, a similar record, like let's say, well, no, actually, that wouldn't be possible because, you know, they would either be like 2-1 or 1-2 or something like that. But then you get down to among the next highest placed team in the division, which, if that's the case, would be Air Force because they'd be 5-3. Within the division, or possibly Colorado State, who won that game?
Let me was check. I'm pretty
that was
sure
Air Force that won that
the
game.
Computer's
right?
being wonky, but I think so. Colorado State. Well, I know New Mexico beat Air
okay,
Force.
Okay, let me double check that while I'm talking. Oh yeah, it was the three point win a couple weeks ago. So Air Force would be your number four team, and you look at how those three teams did against them. New Mexico beat them. Wyoming beat them, I think. And
for which team?
So did Boise. So I guess it'd be a clean sweep. Well, it would be a tie.
Well, no, but if Air Force loses to Boise, Boise has a loss, New Mexico has a loss, and Wyoming would get it because Wyoming beat Air Force.
Whatever happened to that dude who like put together all these tables for us last year?
He participates in the Underdogs poll. It's that guy. He sends you the computer ranking. That guy, him.
Yes.
No, but you're correct. Sure. But no, it's simple as that. Say Air Force is number four in the division. If Air Force beats Boise, Boise has a loss. New Mexico, you're right. New Mexico beat them, and then Wyoming beat them. They come down to Wyoming. It still comes back to Wyoming, New Mexico. So basically,
yes. And if New Mexico wins that game. Are we talking about the Lobos?
I think because
the division champions.
Man,
I don't even know.
This is getting out there.
somebody more visually.
Well, because a tiebreaker removes a team, so Boise's removed because they lost. I mean, like because if let's start over again, assuming Air Force is going to finish fourth in the league, and Air Force beats Boise, it comes down to best record versus highest ranked, highest opponent in the division. Correct.
It would come down to winning percentage.
Oh, so not even best team. So it's whoever your division record against the bottom three teams. Ah, okay.
Yeah. So they would each be 1-1 already, and then you'd have to look at how they did against Air Force They'd Colorado all be State and Utah though. State. They all beat Utah State. Boise and Wyoming and I believe New Mexico beat... No, New Mexico lost to Colorado State. So then it would come down to Boise State and Wyoming.
Let's hope it doesn't come to
that
this.
First tiebreaker.
Oh, no. Sure, yes.
Let's hope it, you know what? I kind of hope it does. Exactly. Just because I want the answer to that.
I'll do some research because I had it in front of me. I had it straightforward. But we'll look further and see because my assumption is, I could be wrong, but once you go through a tiebreaker and you eliminate teams, it somehow comes back to head-to-head. I think. Yeah.
But at least
where? Maybe maybe Wyoming. State. That's what it looks like right now. Well, that's what it's leaning to right now. But back to our overlapping conversation, like bring it full back. Like, let's just say Navy, like San Diego State wins a conference. They have, they're sitting at 2 losses, correct? Yeah. So let's say like Navy wins their American, but loses to Army. That could happen. And Navy has 2 losses right now. So they'd be sitting at then 10-3. But they won the conference, so they're eligible. Then you have, say, it's Ohio or Toledo. Let's go with Ohio because it's worst case as well. Sun Belt champs not getting in. And then you have I don't know who'd get in. Would it San Diego State, 2 losses? I don't know. Probably.
That's tough. I mean, it comes down to the computer polls at that point, right?
No. It doesn't come down to computer. They'll rank as far as they need to rank. Like, hosting duties, but if there's no top 25 team in their final poll, they'll keep ranking until they get one. Which essentially means they'll stick somebody at 26, say, here you are.
See, then you'd be talking about, 11 wins San Diego State. You'd be talking about 10 win Toledo or 8-9 win Ohio. And then either, depending on how things shake out this weekend, you're looking at, 10-win Temple, 11-win South Florida, or, 10...
Losing to Army 11-win,
or, 10-win Navy. Yeah. So...
I'm just saying, here's the thing. Also, then you'll have... even if Boise loses, you'd have Houston sitting at top 20 team. Where do we go? This sucks. And that's... Yeah, well, that's what I'm getting at.
Like the heart of Dallas.
We're going deep in the weeds here, but let's just keep it simple. Let's just say Wyoming wins and they're in the conference title game. That's great. You could have Boise and Houston not win their conference, ranked higher than the undefeated Michigan or Western Michigan team. And I get that's the breaks, but. Do you foresee maybe any change? I don't not, like they care about the group of five. Nobody does really. We do, but not many people. But would they make a change to say it's just the highest rated team? Because there is a big deal about the playoff top four that you had. There's an argument where, you need to win your conference to be in the playoff, but that's no longer there. Do you think that rule could change to these teams if you have two teams in the top 20? Because it's kind of going back to the. UConn year when they played Oklahoma, not ranked, but they got the auto bid. It's like,
I mean, if it were me, I wouldn't make a change just because you want to be able to take care of business in conference. Yeah, and I mean, to me, it's kind of like the whole idea of losing early hurts you more than losing late.
That still applies, I think,
or hurts you less than losing late.
USC.
Because I mean, you look at the teams at the very top.
Look at freaking USC. People are hyping them up for some reason.
USC's hard charging, but they're back in the mix. Clemson lost relatively early in conference play, but they're still right there in the mix.
Oklahoma.
Ohio State. They lost, but they're still right there at number two or number three, and so is Michigan. So. To me, it's just kind of like that situation.
Very true. Yeah.
The diet version of that.
No, not even diet. I mean? It's like the Shasta version or store brand version of whatever that is.
Yeah, it's just, I think among the playoff rankings especially, it hurts group five teams more to lose late than it does for a power five team to lose late. So that's where I think it comes down to a team like Boise. Just basically, you're asking them to take care of business in the Mountain West. And when you lose a game like they did against Wyoming, that's just part of the situation of dealing with it. Because then you're up against a undefeated Western Michigan team that has basically rolled through the MAC. And, you know, I think that's kind of the message that it sends, to keep that in place, where teams like Houston and Boise can have very good years without winning the conference, and well, just kind of shrug your shoulders and say, well, that's you know.
Yeah, then why play Oregon State? Why play Washington State? Why play Colorado, Texas, Oklahoma, Louisville? Why play those teams if it doesn't matter?
You play those teams to get.
What they're saying is you don't have to, because Western Michigan's strength of schedule is just awful. You're telling me, it's like with Marshall a couple years ago, they were finally ranked, but it's telling me you don't have to play a good schedule, just win your league and play three crappy teams or three guys at your level or below and just beat them and be fine.
Well, yeah, but
I'm talking non-conference.
The team on your schedule.
Like Houston went out and got Louisville and Oklahoma, and then whoever they played, I think Lamar or something early on, but what this tells me, Western Michigan, they played Illinois. I'm not trying to be all Craig James here, but what I'm saying is Boise, if they wanted to, or any team that's usually going to be good year in, year out, why not go play Idaho, New Mexico State, and Texas San Antonio in your non-conference?
So then what Western Michigan is kind of what you're saying, I think, is that the Broncos out there in the MAC are basically a remixed version of 2007
Hawaii. Hawaii played two FCS teams that year.
Because Hawaii.
Yeah,
Hawaii
they played Washington
a super
State,
soft
that's
schedule.
Terrible, and two FCS teams.
And went on to get to this. So that's the argument that I think you're trying to make, is that, you know, you can play a soft schedule, but then at the same time, all it takes is one really weird year for things to break your way, and that's
kind of
how things
are shaken
out for
Western
Michigan.
Yeah, I'm not comparing to Hawaii, because they played Illinois and Northwestern, who S&P, Northwestern's 50, and then they got Illinois 105. So their best win is the Northwestern team, who might win 8 games? Toledo will be their best game by the end, but it's just crazy. So I do love chaos. So I may put something together for chaos' sake this week, but go chaos, I guess. Let's get to some games here. Should we get to we spent far too long on that. Hope you guys don't have a headache or something. So how about we'll take a quick timeout so people can go get a beverage of choice for a quick minute while you guys relax. So let's do that right here. All right, let's get to games. Are you ready for games? Finally. Okay, Friday night.
Yes, let's
do
it.
Or not Friday night, but Friday, Black Friday. Do you go shopping on Black Friday? Do you care?
I usually sleep in on Black Friday because I am a smart person.
I've gone once. Wasn't worth it. Unless there's something really cool, I'll best my chance going Friday afternoon or Friday night. But 1:30...
If you're not going out there for the baby Nintendo, you're not doing it right. That's all.
Walmart, I want to kick you in the face. I had it in my shopping cart, hit pay. Oh, it's gone. I'm like, are you kidding me? I was ticked. All right, but let's get to the game. 1:30 p.m. local time, Boise State at Air Force, CBS Sports Network. I was going to guess the line of this game, but I just saw it. But do you have any clue what the favorite is for Boise State?
I'm going to take a wild stab and say like Boise by...
Oh, you're a little off tonight.
13.5.
I actually thought it'd be like 5
points. It's a little lower than I expected. Well, and that's interesting, because I wonder if they're giving the Falcons a little bit of credit for their recent resurgence. Because, you know, they slipped a little bit during the middle of the season, but, you know, now that they have Arian Worthman under center, they look like the team we expected them to be all along. If you know, go back and kind of chart how their yards per carry have looked throughout the season, there was a little bit of a lull in the middle there where, you know, in October they had, you know, 3.2 yards per carry against Navy, 3.8 against Wyoming. But since Worthman's taken over the last month, and especially in the last three games against Army and Colorado, or like he and the rest of the running offense have basically been torching everybody. I'm trying to look up what they have. They've been averaging 6.5 yards per carry in the last three games, and they have 14 rushing touchdowns. You know, that I think was what we expected the ceiling of this team to be all along. And they're hitting it at the right time to be able to play a really dangerous spoiler for the Broncos. But then if you look at, you know, Boise State's run defense, on the other hand, you know, they're still, you know, okay on the season, but in the last few weeks, that's another unit that's been really pushed. You know, Wyoming put up over 200 yards on the ground against them, and so did San Jose State, remarkably enough. And so did Hawaii, even in that blowout loss. So, you know, it's a defense that's been pushed a lot on the ground. And while, you know, they obviously have option demons earlier this season against New Mexico.
So, like I said, too many points for Air Force, what they've given up. But as we know, switching background, the triple option, Boise's not a fan of other defensive side of the ball. And like you mentioned, with Worthman running very well, this could be a bad Boise rush defense.
Yeah, I mean, the bright side for them, though, is they still have the best quarterback in the conference. And I think that if they're going to find a way to beat them, you know, the Falcons, you know, Brett Rypien, you know, he's answered the bell in kind of overcoming the turnovers he had last year in those games that they lost in conference. And, you know, the chances are high that they're just going to need him to do it again, you know, and he's been pretty good about that in the last month as far as avoiding turnovers and things like that. You know, Boise State on offense, especially through the air, has really hit their stride. Because, I mean, he's, by a lot of metrics, he's, you know, got a 64% completion percentage. He's got 9.5 yards per attempt. And those numbers go up a little bit, even in conference play. You know, he's at 15 touchdowns and just one interception in 7 conference games so far. So he's been the difference, and they're probably going to need him to continue being that guy if they want to get ahead early and then be able to keep Falcons at arm's length. Because if you can get a lead on him, you know, Air Force is probably going to get their yards one way or another. But, you know, if you can keep that offense, you know, having to catch up, I think that's how you probably beat them.
Yeah, it's like we say, they'll get the yards, but don't let them get the 30-yard, 40-yard, 20-yard attack or those big plays. Also, like we said, back for the over-under or the line, it was 9.5. S&P Plus probability, 74% chance for Boise State to win.
That sounds about right.
Average score, 37-26.
So they like Boise to cover?
Yeah, by 11 points, yeah. So I think Boise, I don't know, because last year is a weird game. 2 years ago, all the turnovers. I want to say Boise will win because I don't, even as well as Air Force has been playing, I don't think they've, not that they'll be bad, but I don't think they're really going to challenge this game because look who they beat the past month. Army, who's meh. We know how Fresno State is, nothing spectacular there. Well, like we said last week, their worst season probably ever, or is ever. And then they give up so many points to San Jose State. So I think Air Force can get some points, but I think Boise is going to win probably like 31-20 or something.
I think it could possibly be a little bit closer than that. Like I'm anticipating something like a field goal difference. So I like Air Force to cover that spread and really make Boise work for it in the end.
Okay. I think they'll win. I could see that too. I just don't really see during the winning streak, they've been impressive scoring the ball, but too many points. But this game's always, Air Force is always good. So except for very rarely where they're not very good. So excuse me, but Boise wins. That's my prediction. I think they'll cover. You say they'll be a close one. Weather really quick out there in Air Force, 53 degrees. And let's move on to Saturday. We have some non-conference games we'll get to, but let's start in your neck of the woods. Is that okay?
Well, I guess we got to get to it at some point. Might as well rip it off like a Band-Aid.
San Jose State at Fresno State.
The saddest game.
CBS Sports Network, 12:30 p.m. Welcome, Zach Klein. For some reason, yeah. Again?
Again, yeah. I haven't heard anything that suggests that anything's going to change at this point. Unless the excuse is we're trying to save Chase and Virgil's life, it still doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, if you were to be like Eric Kiesel, what would you, besides, like, is that your only reason to say not to get him hurt or something? Is that your only excuse to, or not excuse, but your rationale for starting a guy who's not going to be here next year?
I mean, it almost has to be, even though what you keep hearing is that, he'll give a spark to the offense, let alone that there's basically like three guys in the FBS who, I don't know if anybody saw it on Twitter the other day, but I went and I actually looked this up by quarterback rating. Among the quarterbacks who have at least as many passes as Zach Klein does, which is 62 passes. So maybe some small sample caveats apply. But there's more or less like three guys in the entire country who have been worse than him. One of those guys, surprisingly, is Daryl Gerritsen before he got hurt. The other guy is James Napke out at Bowling Green, who lost his job to a freshman quarterback.
Uh-oh.
And then, you're looking at, running quarterbacks like at Georgia Southern and Tulane, who are, in charge of run-heavy offenses and probably aren't expected to be terribly accurate passers. And then even if you extend it to the Power Five, like the only guys who've been worse are, freshmen who've been thrust into, action at Maryland and Illinois, who are two eminently forgettable Big Ten teams. I don't understand why they think he's going to be any better, because he's had two games to prove that he's not. But that
13 total points in two games. What spark is there? I don't see a spark in 13 points.
I mean, people were making the argument that the receivers dropped like five passes. It's like, well, so what? They've been dropping passes all year long for Chase and Virgil, and you were screaming for his head. I don't even know. But I think that the wide receivers against the San Jose State defense, I'll say it, I think it's a pretty interesting matchup. I just don't think Klein has it in him to get them the football as much as they could. And on the flip side, if there's one team that probably has zero ability to get to Kenny Potter, this team is it. And, for anybody who watched the game last week against Air Force, like, it wouldn't surprise me if he goes for over 300 yards again and makes a difference as a scrambler again, because he had a big game both with his arm and with his legs last week.
Here's the thing. We know Virgil can run. Klein can move a little bit. This San Jose State rush defense, as I said all year, is not very good. Why not stick a mobile guy back in there? This is the way. If Fresno's going to hang around and win, that's going to be how. Give it to is Josh Hokett going to play running back again, the linebacker?
As far as I know, yeah. Honestly, I think if they want to win, they're probably going to give him and Dontell James and, whoever else is healthy back there. So, someone like Trayvon Green. They're probably going to run the ball like 50 times or something like that.
Yeah, as you should. Like last week, they ran 52 times versus Hawaii.
And I mean, it wasn't spectacular because they only averaged like 4 yards a carry, but yeah, that's still significantly better than what they've done basically all year long. And like you said, San Jose State's front seven is, toilet paper soft. So
wet toilet
paper. Yeah, so I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if they really lean on that to try to get down the field, because they finally showed signs of life running the football last week. And I think they're going to want to try to test the Spartans that way again, because everybody else has been doing it.
I'm thinking this game could be a weird shootout type of game, just because I think Kenny Potter will throw it well against this team. But I think Fresno can run just enough to maybe score some points that way. Like, if you look at the advanced stuff, like at Number Fire and team rankings, Number Fire actually has Fresno winning 26.9 to 26.1.
That doesn't make any sense. Well, I mean, and I'll turn your attention to Football Study Hall then, and I will point out that Bill Connolly gives Fresno State a 54% chance of winning this game.
Because they're at home?
I assume that has something to do with it. They project a 29.5 to 27.7 final score. You know, never mind that Fresno State hasn't scored 29 points in a game since like 1976.
Hey, they scored 41 versus Tulsa. Come on.
Yeah, well, they scored, you know, 31 points in one half and then basically have done nothing ever since.
Yeah, their next high is 22 against Nevada, which they lost.
Yeah, so, I mean, I honestly don't see how the offense is going to be able to keep up with San Jose State's offense because, like I said, this is one of the few instances where they should be able to keep Potter upright. And they have enough big play receivers, the Spartans do, to really make the secondary pay for its mistakes. And on the flip side, you know, I see like an immense potential for turnovers to really put this game out of reach for San Jose State early, because that's one big advantage that they have over this Fresno State secondary. You know, the Bulldogs only have 4 interceptions. And when you look at a guy like Andre Chachere, who's having himself a pretty good year, he has 4 interceptions by himself. So, I mean, don't be surprised if Klein puts up a bad pass or two and San Jose is able to turn that into easy touchdowns, because honestly, that seems pretty likely against this particular defense.
All right, you've convinced me. 31-10 San Jose State.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Sounds about right.
Put this entire coaching staff out of its misery.
All right, next game. Let's move on. Nevada, UNLV.
Fremont Cannon.
The best trophy out there.
Word.
In Las Vegas, ESPN3, 1 p.m. Pacific kickoff. Or let me rephrase the name of the game. Brian Polian loses, you're fired. Matchup.
That's probably true, huh?
Because he's sitting at 4-7. Not that expectations were extremely high this year, but you're in the West Division, and you have talent on the team, well, at least alleged talent, I should say. This team should have at least gone 6-6 this year.
I mean, you would think. It's just that, you know, the quarterback situation didn't really sort itself out until it was too late. And James Butler has been good, but I think that they maybe expected a little bit more than they've gotten from him. You know, because if you look at, you know, some of his numbers, you know, he's got almost 1,200 yards and he has 9 touchdowns. And that's a pretty good season for, you know, an average running back. But when you look at how he compares to, like, the big three in the Mountain West, Pumphrey, McNichols, and Brian Hill, like, there's basically no comparison. Like, he's averaging 5 yards a carry, which is fine. But I think this team was counting on him to do a lot of heavy lifting. And he's been a little bit hit or miss, which I think has really betrayed them when the passing offense struggled, especially early. And additionally, I don't think that they found the guy behind him to really step up and shoulder some of the workload. Like, Jackson Kincaid has had, you know, flashes of potential here and there, but he hasn't been totally consistent. It kind of reminds me a little bit of, you know, Martez Waller in the last year or two that he was here at Fresno State, where he was okay, but he didn't really get a lot of help in the running game. So if I'm Nevada, I'm looking to try to, you know, push this UNLV defense by running the football. I think you need to give Butler 20 carries, but I also think
that's pretty average.
Yeah. And I think you also need to figure out how to give Kincaid and, you know, maybe give Rufus a couple more tries in the Wildcat back there, because they've been pretty solid against the pass overall, UNLV has. And Ty Ganji's been better than Tyler Stewart in a lot of respects. But, you know, he has 7 touchdowns and 6 interceptions already, which is twice as many as Stewart had in slightly fewer attempts. So they're going to have to be mindful of that. And I think they're really going to want to lean on the ground game to keep this game close, which makes sense because chances are UNLV is probably going to do the same thing too.
It's true. And that's with this Nevada offense, they need a second and third running back. And so Butler's, like I said, he's having a fine season. His average is actually pretty close to Brian Hill. He's at 5.5 yards per carry. to five, but they don't. They just need a second and third guy. So maybe you're right. Go to bring the safety over, play some more triple option because it worked okay. Do maybe just, you don't need to do 20 snaps, but maybe do five snaps with the moving the guy from safety to quarterback like they did earlier in the year. Why not try that for a couple times? Mix it up a little bit. If he runs the ball five times, say they're all keepers, that could be 40 yards maybe in the triple option attack. 30 yards or something. It's something where it could give a boost to mix things up a little bit.
Yeah, and I mean, at the same time, too, I think you wonder for this particular defense, you know, the question is the same as it is pretty much every week. Are they going to be able to stop this running game? And I still have my doubts, honestly. But at the same time, if they can, then the question becomes, which Kurt Palahniuk is going to show up? Is it going to be the guy who lit up Wyoming? Or is it going to be the guy who really struggled a week later in Boise? If it's somewhere in between, I think that UNLV probably wins this game pretty handily. But, you know,
go ahead.
Nevada has a couple of playmakers back there. They haven't made quite as many plays as you might expect. Like Rufus, for example, doesn't have any interceptions this year, which I don't think you would have expected coming into the year. And neither does Damian Baber. But that doesn't mean they don't have the talent to make Palahniuk pay if he's careless with the football.
Which could be the case because he threw last week, he's not known to be the best thrower or passer. And also, really quick, as we know, Lexington Thomas has missed the past two games. He's playing no matter what. Sanchez said he's not 100%, but he looks good enough. He needs to go. It's been 3 weeks. Also, they're sticking true freshman Jaron Caldwell left tackle, which could be interesting for UNLV.
Interesting.
Sanchez says it's no big deal. They're just rotating, but that could be a big deal. I know it's end of the year, but he's still a true freshman. Also, apparently, I was reading through this. Is from the Review Journal. Have you happened to see what was engraved inside the cannon this year by Reno last year?
I did not.
So they reclaimed the cannon last year, and then who is this? I think it's Coach Sanchez speaking, or whoever. But they took it apart to clean it. There is an engraving inside University of Not a Lot of Victories.
Ooh.
At UNLV,
UNLV's winning by 40.
They're winning by 40, yeah. Because of that.
No, but I mean, honestly, though, I do like UNLV to win this game pretty comfortably.
Oh, also, real quick. Sanchez has known about this since last year, just now showed it to him.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they're definitely winning by 60.
I need to send this to Chris if he's seen that, but man, that's. Hey, that's clever, man. That's clever smack, man. That's a good move by both sides.
Yeah, I mean, I've been down on Nevada all year, and they have nice pieces. I just don't think that they have enough to really challenge UNLV's ground game in this particular instance. I think, you know, kind of like we talked about going into the Air Force game a couple weeks ago, this is another really bad matchup for the Wolfpack coming up against this particular kind of running game.
It is, because UNLV doesn't need to throw either, especially with Thomas back there. If they're playing like Xavier Campbell and all the other runners they've had the past couple weeks, there's no need for Palahniuk to have a big game in the air. He just needs to be efficient and pass the ball that way and just let the running game take over, because we know the Nevada front seven on defense is not very good this year.
So what's the margin on this one?
Nine. Or no, wait, excuse me, hold on. I think it just changed just a second. Let me double check. 8.5, excuse me. It was 7. It's 8.5. Obviously, the home team's favorite here, the Rebels. Neither team can go bowling, so it's pretty much for pride. That's what they're playing.
I think I kind of like UNLV in this one to cover.
Because of the engraving?
I mean, it's definitely it's motivation that doesn't hurt.
I need to find that photo and do a quick article on that, because that's very clever of them. So I agree with you. I think UNLV will run the ball at will. And didn't Palahniuk have a good game last week throwing the ball?
Against Boise, not really.
Was that last week? Or maybe I was thinking the game before against Wyoming. Regardless, Rebels cover by about two touchdowns at least. So next game, let's see, time order here. CSU at San Diego State. It's a back to the good old late evening, late afternoon, early evening games on CBS Sports Network, 6 p.m. Pacific time at the Q.
You want to talk about motivated?
Do you think they will be motivated, the Aztecs?
I mean, I think if you're coming off a loss like that on the road where you expected to win, and if I remember reading correctly that Donnell Pumphrey predicted a win in Wyoming, probably. Yeah, they're going to come out mad.
He was also humbled after the loss, like, crap, this is terrible. Yeah. Just given, obviously give them credit, never fumbles, and that was his first lost fumble. Aztecs are a 11.5-point favorite. They, like we mentioned much earlier in the show, there's still technicality where Aztecs could get to the Cotton Bowl. They need a lot of help, such as probably like Temple winning the American or Ohio winning the MAC. So there's still a lot to play for. They still can get 10 wins, which is a big deal for them because this program has been, outside the past 5 or 6 years, pretty awful previous to that, with like Chuck Long and those guys trying to run the show there. But Pumphrey's also getting very close to Ron Dane's all-time rushing record. He's right now, Pumphrey, even though he had, 75 yards last week, he's now number 3 all-time.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's kind of where you have to start is – is Pumphrey going to be able to rebound? Because if you look at what Colorado State's done against the run this year, like, they've been okay. Like, they're giving up 4.5 yards on the season, but within conference play, they've really kind of been roughed up more often than not. You know, they're giving up just over 5.5 yards per carry, which is 10th in conference play. And especially in the last few weeks, they've been, you know, They took a lot of punishment from Air Force, as you might expect them to. You know, they gave up over 7 yards to the Falcons per play,
and seven touchdowns.
And then, you know, they got pushed, as you might expect, by New Mexico as well. You know, for almost 6 yards a carry. You know, so whether they're conditioned to that kind of run heavy offense, more of a pro style offense running the football, you know, I think if you're going to get any kind of training and being disciplined, that, you know, playing Air Force in New Mexico back to back might be the way to go. But I mean, what's the over under for Pumphrey on this one still? Is it like 150?
Maybe. If you look back further, Wyoming and Boise State, which is the most comparable style running the ball, 4.7 to Boise, 5.5 to Wyoming. So that's right about their average, about 5 yards per game. But Pumphrey, his over-under has to always be 150 yards, no matter what, I think. But if you look at where he's, like, he wants to get that record. He is sitting at 6,127 yards. You have a Ricky Williams, which is 6,279, Ron Dane, 6,397. So if he's going to break this record in this game, he'll need over 200 yards.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that in order to really slow him down, you know, if you look at the tackles for loss numbers, especially like the performance that they put up against Fresno State, is like a huge outlier in the last month or so. But, you know, generally speaking, there's been kind of decline from the way that they were playing earlier in the year to how they have played later in the year. Because, you know, even though they beat UNLV pretty comfortably, they only had 3 tackles for loss, and they only had 4 against Air Force, and they only had 4 against New Mexico. And I think that, you know, if you want to slow down not just Pumphrey, but the guys behind him, like, you know, Juwan Washington and Rashard Penny, because, you know, those guys are going to get carries. They're going to need to try to get back to their season average, which is about 7.5 tackles for loss. Whether they can do that, I think, is kind of the big X factor for this game.
Well, what about with the Rams passing game? Because Nick Stevens, I know he was only 9 of 10 last week, but he's actually basically 2015 Nick Stevens throwing the ball.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the other big thing, too, is I think within conference play, if you sort by quarterback rating, he's more or less neck and neck with Brett Rypien with one less game to his credit. So, you know, the same thing that we talked about with Josh Allen last week, being kind of the best quarterback that San Diego State has faced in conference, that question definitely applies to Nick Stevens. And it'll be interesting to me to see how often they match up Michael Gallup, especially against DeMonte Casey, or whether they choose to move him around the field, because Gallup has you know, in conference play has basically been the best receiver in the conference. Like, he's number one in receptions. He's number one in, you know, overall yards. And he's averaging over 17 yards catch to boot. So I'm interested in how often, you know, San Diego State tries to force their hand by shadowing him with DeMonte Casey, or whether they trust the secondary as a unit to keep him in check, because it's not like he's the only playmaker in that backfield. Like, Ron Smith for the second straight week had an interception last week, and the guys behind them, you know, Baldwin and Malik Smith and, you know, Cameron Kelly, those are all guys capable of making plays as well if Steven's not careful. But I'm interested to see what that particular matchup looks like. If Gallup, I think, can get over 100 yards, Colorado State should be in good shape.
Which he's done in three of the past six games, so. Or four, excuse me, four of the past six games. He has eight touchdowns. Like we said, the one weakness is the passing the ball. Not that the Rams pass it amazingly well. They spread it out, because if it's not Gallup, I'm looking, their next guy is like, oh, what's, I'm going to screw his name up, but Olabosi Johnson has only 21 receptions. Going down farther, Robert Ruiz only 18. So they don't really, they spread around a little bit, like Ryan Reflett has like eight receptions, yeah, tight end. So while Gallup's the guy, I think they're going to need to get other guys involved. Not a lot, but just enough to where they can't just force on Gallup, because South Alabama spread it out. They can go three wide and a tight end and a running back can be fine. Because also, look at the Rams' rushing attack. It's gotten better with Dalen Dawkins, Izzy Matthews. All the guys back there have been running the ball quite well the past couple weeks. So that'll be tough to get against this ASIC defense, but they're going to have to try and just keep running. They can't just rely, because I don't think Nick Stevens can beat them on his own.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I think what it comes down to is whether they can maintain that 5 yards per carry average, because that's more or less what they've done since the Boise State game. Like, that was a big reason why they were in that game for most of it, because they averaged 5.1 yards per carry against the Broncos. But in the last 3 weeks, if you look at those yards per carry averages, it was, you know, 5.4, 5.3, and then last week in the big win, it was almost 10. So, well, obviously I'm not expecting them to match what they did against the Lobos, but if that three-headed attack can really get after that front six, that 3-3 stack that they have in the middle of defense, who knows? Because I think, you know, we all know Colorado State wants to be balanced. And if they can, if they could be efficient rather than explosive, I think that that can play into their favor as well.
I agree. I think what's going to happen, this is going to be, because it's 11.5 points, I think the Rams are going to cover and keep this a close game.
Oh, man. I can't believe I'm about to do this. Do we have a sound effect for the stupid upset pick?
Here we go.
Good enough. I like Colorado State in this one.
Oh, outright?
I think Colorado State can sneak up on them.
There we go. Rams for the victory. Ooh, that's the headline here. Hey, not another question. They've been playing quite well this week, and either Aztecs are going to be pissed and want to win, or they're like, or they have a similar game last week where they're struggling against the team, because Wyoming ran and passed against them and got the victory, and they needed special teams to keep it close. But you say Rams win, I say Aztecs do not cover but still win. So next game, this is the game of the week: Wyoming at New Mexico, ESPN2. So, cash the check, boys. Get some money there. Have you looked at the line on this game for its 8:15 local kick in Albuquerque?
I'm going to guess Wyoming by 6.
Wyoming's favored by 3 field goal.
Interesting.
So, as we mentioned earlier in the show, Wyoming wins during the division, during the conference title game, likely hosting a rematch for San Diego State. They lose, things can go crazy. We're not going to repeat that again here, because we spent enough time doing that.
So I think, isn't the question like which New Mexico defense is going to show up?
That's always a question.
Because I'm looking this up real quick as I talk about you know, yards per play. Because if you look at the disparity between the yards per game that they've allowed throughout the year, it's at 392 yards per game, which is good for fifth in the conference. But if you look at the yards per play, that figure drops them to 10th, and it's over, it's like 6.4 yards per play. And when you look at, you know, the difference in, you know, conference play, the defense has really taken a step backwards. They're dead last in yards per play within conference action. And so I think that, you know, to me, the big question is, are they going to be able to run, stop them? Because they got absolutely massacred last week after more or less playing pretty well against some pretty decent running attacks. Like, they held Hawaii to 125 yards on the ground, which is pretty good. And they held Nevada down to 108 yards on the ground, which is also pretty good considering you're up against James Butler. But Colorado State basically ran over them last week. And so what's
400.
And so what's to say that Brian Hill isn't going to be able to do the same thing?
Quite possible. Looking at, like, you, it's going back to yards per play, when they're playing teams that are just even decent, not even that, but like Rams average, every time the Rams snap the ball, they get a first down against New Mexico, 11.08. Utah State, who doesn't have Devontae Mays and the running game's terrible, seven yards an attempt a play. Nevada's offense, like I said, which isn't very good, 7 yards an attempt. Hawaii, okay, 4.3, but then Air Force over 7. Boise over 7. San Jose State nearly 8 yards a play.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the splits between the games that they win and the games that they lose, it's not just the defense that has a problem, because, you know, in the games that they've lost, they've averaged, they've given up almost 7 yards a play, just like a shade under. But on the flip side, like, if you look at what the offense has done too in their wins and their losses, their production drops by almost a yard and a half per play in the four games that they've lost. So to me, the big question is, we know Wyoming's kind of walking wounded in that front seven now. Like, they had already lost Carl Granderson from the year. You know, now they're going to be without Chase Appleby up front. And that's going to put a lot of pressure on the other guys on that defensive line, guys like Kevin Prosser and, you know, Johanna Gaifan, who have really taken more significant roles than I think we might have expected them to. Are they going to be able to hold up against a team that you know is going to come right after you?
My favorite running back, Tarion Gibson?
Yeah.
I don't know. I said it. He's my favorite back. He's the most explosive back in the conference, yeah, I would say.
I think that if any team is going to miss any one person that's gotten hurt recently, it might be Wyoming missing Appleby, because he's been great in the middle of that defense.
He has, and like I said, all year long, like out, like pretty much whenever, if they could slow down Gibson at all, like even last week, you had Tyron Owens had a big touchdown run, I think a 60-plus yarder. Maybe it's just me, but I said it before, they lost Rutgers because they didn't have Gibson. They lost to the Aggies of New Mexico State without Gibson. They lost last week because Gibson was held in check for I think his long was like 15 or something, not what he normally has. With those two guys out, Gibson could go for 10 carries, 190 yards, nothing flat. Yes. And also, Wyoming has lost 3 games on the road. Eastern Michigan, UNLV triple overtime, and at Nebraska.
And I think one thing to watch for in this game is, if you look on Football Study Hall at the power success rate metric, and I'll just throw the definition out there real quick. It's basically, you know, short yardage situations where it's 2 yards or less on third or fourth down, where you get a first down or a touchdown.
This is on offense.
So when you compare Wyoming and New Mexico in that regard, on offense, you know, New Mexico's, they're only 70th in those short yardage situations, whereas Wyoming is up to 26. But on the flip side, on defense, Wyoming's power success rate is 110th in the country. And for New Mexico, this will probably surprise you, but they're 21st. So I think that whoever wins those particular short yardage situations, if you're looking at those plays where it's like 3rd and 3, 3rd and 2, Or if it gets later in the game and it's a 4th-and-2 and someone needs a first down at midfield to keep the drive alive. Those are those hidden plays that I think fans will want to pay attention to, because whoever wins more of those plays is probably going to win this game.
This game, people know my love for New Mexico. I'm not going to hide it. I like Football Bob. I like the Lobos. Like, their offense is fun to watch. But so is Wyoming. Wyoming is a very good team as well. But I'm leaning toward New Mexico getting the victory at home.
Ooh, tell me why.
Tarion Gibson, the running attack. Wyoming's losing two of their best linemen. Can they keep up that pounding of the option attack? Even they'll stick in Lamar Jordan. You know, they can actually throw with Austin Apodaca, Apodaca being QB. They can throw a little bit. I think because they're on my, here's my main, one of my other main points. You lost on the road to UNLV. You allowed 69 points. I know it's a triple overtime, but that's still take what was an overtime? 3 touchdowns? But still 40-plus points in regulation you gave up to UNLV, who has like 0 wide receivers. Devontae Boyd is playing with a freaking broken arm in that game. I just think they're not at home, which takes a step down for me. They're missing 2 key defensive players. And New Mexico can break off a big play at any moment. I don't care who they're playing.
See, to me, I see this game as a potentially 1st-to-40 kind of situation.
I can see that too.
I feel like this has the makings of a track meet where, kind of like they had to do in UNLV, they're going to have to score points. And I mean, the obvious counter argument to what you just said is that they gave up 69 points, but they also scored 66 points.
They sure
they definitely did. And I'm trying to look at what Wyoming did as far as, you know, on the road versus at home. And the, you know,
3 losses, that's what they've done.
But I mean,
3
if losses. You look at the yards per play on, you know, on just total offense, there's really hardly any difference at all. Like, it's basically 6.2 on, they've actually done a little bit better on offense on their own than they have at home. And if you look at that same split on the defensive side of the ball, they've just only been a little bit worse. And if you go back and look at those games, like, you know, UNLV was a 1-score loss. It was a field goal difference. Same with Eastern Michigan. That was kind of a weird game where Josh Allen more or less kind of gave it away late. And then, of course, you know, he had his 4th quarter meltdown against Nebraska really early in the season.
But that was close. Through 3-plus quarters, it was, I think, a 10-point game or something.
Yeah, but I mean, on the flip side, you know, they had a big game on the road in Nevada, where they scored 42 points, and they came back from a slow start in the rivalry against Colorado State and handled the Rams pretty handily. So I think it depends on your interpretation, because, you know, 1-score games tend to turn from, you know, year to year and from week to week, so it's hard to really glean too much from it. You know, let's not forget, they at home, they beat San Diego State by 1, and they beat Boise by 2. So
true. And but also in the Aztec game, San Diego State needed 2 special team scores to get to that.
So to me, the question comes down to, you know, if a team is down 7 points and they need to go 80 yards for a game tying score, which team do I trust? And to me, the answer is pretty obvious, is that it's Wyoming.
What, you don't like the one handoff play to Gibson for 80?
I don't necessarily want to count on it.
No, they very good points. Yes, if you need a long drive, like I said last week, you're telling me Aztecs have 99 yards to go in 66 seconds. I would bet everything that they would not score a touchdown, and they did. But if it comes down to one drive and you need 60 to 80 yards, yeah, I would lean more toward Wyoming, because if it's 3rd-and-7 for the Lobos, sheesh, I don't think the good things will happen.
I mean, I feel like New Mexico's defense hasn't shown me what I was hoping to see from them. And so I feel like they're going to have a hard time keeping up with the points that Wyoming's probably going to score. So I see this as kind of like maybe a 52-42 type of game where Wyoming comes out on top.
Is that your final prediction?
Yeah.
Well, I mean by 10. I know what I should pick, but should I pick them? Did you know, really quick, Wyoming's 11th in total defense allowed?
I did not know that.
They're also near the bottom at over almost 6.5 yards per play as well, giving up 6.3. Just saying, throwing it out there. Right. Just saying.
You're stalling.
Oh, man. I just happened to notice that because Lobo is running the ball very well. I got to go. Man. They just haven't been good on the road. And New Mexico, I think my blindness for New Mexico playing well is a reason, or not playing well, or what they could do. I think am I looking too much at the potential what New Mexico could do?
Is this your stupid upset pick?
Oh, man. Give me the Lobos.
Oh, here we go.
Outright. I like the Lobos. They're at home. And Wyoming struggled on the road. But I think it's going to be a 40-plus point game. It's just the thing really getting at me. It was that UNLV game. New Mexico's better than UNLV.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably true. I just think that the road struggles, quote-unquote, are a little bit overstated.
But you gave up 60-plus points. Let's just say if the UNLV game was, say, 24-21 in overtime, I probably would be fine to go Wyoming. They'll be fine, but that's a lot of points. And so I'm going. That's kind of the reason that sticks out to me too much. So I'm going Lobos to win outright. Next game, final game, which nobody can see unless you're in Hawaii.
We have two more real quick.
Oh, sorry. Oh, geez, we do? Crap. Utah State at BYU. Sorry. Utah State's one of my favorite teams on ESPN, so it goes to the top. ESPNU, 8:15 local time there at Provo.
How's BYU been these days?
They've been pretty good. However, when you're playing the likes of UMass, and most people would look pretty good, Southern Utah, Cincinnati, who's fallen off, and then they look terrible versus Boise. Well, no, sorry. Their defense looked good versus Boise State, but I just saw the line here, and I'm shocked it's this much. Do you have any idea what
I'm going to guess it's probably like BYU by 10.
Almost try doubling that. Oh, 18 okay. And a half.
Can we just skip straight to the end and say I'll take the points? I'll take the points against BYU, yeah.
Here's the thing. Chatting with Matt Wells today, not myself, but for my other job, we had him on our show. We asked him point blank, is Devontae Mays going to play? And I told you earlier today, coach speak, game time decision. Which means he's not going to play. I don't think he's going to play. He's missed the past two games. This is a rival game. They think that there's a giant wagon wheel that's involved in the victory, which is an odd choice for a trophy, but whatever. It's better than the golden screwdriver, yeah. Am I right? BYU should win easily, but 18.5, that's a lot of points.
I think one thing to keep in mind for this game is I noticed a kind of a disparity in the turnover margin where, you know, both Utah State and BYU, I think, have been a little bit lucky between, you know, the expected turnovers and the actual turnovers. You know, BYU right now has got a plus 12 margin, which is pretty good, all things considered. It's, I believe, one of the best
in the country. I think it's top.
Whereas, you know, Utah State's at minus 5, which isn't as good. But they've been a little bit luckier than you might expect them to be given kind of, you know, for example, that Kent Myers has 7 fumbles on the year, but he's only lost 2 of them, for example. So I think that, you know, whoever wins the turnover battle it seems kind of obvious, but I think that for this particular matchup, if Utah State can force turnovers, you know, we've talked, I believe, about Taysom Hill in the past about how he's not that great of a thrower. And he has 9 interceptions against just 11 touchdowns. So I think if you can get him into those third and long situations at crucial junctures in the game, maybe you can force him into a mistake. Because I think in general, Utah State's going to have an uphill climb to pull an upset. But I think if they can force Hill into those situations, that's kind of an avenue that will let them do that.
It's a possibility because BYU's wide receivers are also very terrible.
Yeah, that is.
Well, it doesn't help when, like, I've seen Taysom Hill enough the past 5 years. Two things I know. He has zero touch, which means if you're a screen game, you better have stick him or something to catch the ball because he'll rock it at your face. And he overthrows guys on long balls, which you'll not see many 15-plus yard passes in this
what
game.
BYU's top three receivers, Nick Kurtz, Mitchell Jurgens, and Colby Pearson, high catch rates, low yards per catch.
Jonah Turnerman's a guy that'll go deep on you, but he can't catch the ball as well because Taysom, again, is not accurate.
Yeah, so I mean, I think if,
exactly.
So I think if Utah State can keep the ball in front of them like that, like if what you're saying is that BYU's not a really explosive offense passing the football, I think that that's the kind of thing that plays into their hands as well. Because Utah State, for all their flaws, if you look at the explosiveness rating, they're 15th in the country on defense. So if they force BYU to have to drive, they've shown the ability to pull some stops every now and again. They just need to be able to do it consistently against this offense.
So let me give you a couple stats here real quick on BYU. On the passing game, because that's what I want to stick with, because that's what they're not very good at. They are 111th in the country in yards per attempt. 6.3 yards per attempt. Only 60% passing the ball. And then if you go further, I think they didn't get their first 20-plus passing yard. Let me see if I can pull up the splits here real quick. But it took them – hold on, situational stats here. It took them a couple games to get passes over 20 yards. Like, if you look at where they're at, like, when they get – like, here's a good example because of Taysom Hill. When it's third and seven or more, he is 23 for – 58. Well under 50%. So when it's third and long, not very good. He doesn't throw downfield. He does have a long pass to 75, but that was the opening play versus Toledo. But for the year, only 15 passing plays over 25 yards, which to me seems like not very many.
So what do you think is going to happen in this game?
They're going to hand the ball off to Jamal Williams as much as possible. He missed a couple games for injury, but I think 18.5 is way too much because I don't think this is probably the best team BYU's played in a while, but that's not saying much from who they beat the past month.
Mm-hmm.
Kent Myers could have a decent day, but the linebacking group for BYU is pretty good. And one thing to watch out for, they played a linebacker, Harvey Longy, at running back last week. So if Jamal Williams goes down, they may stick him, and he did pretty well. But I don't see Utah State winning. I think they might hang around a little bit because they've had four games of touchdown or less losses. So their 3-8 record's not really who they are.
Yeah.
They just need Tony Lindsay to have a big game running the ball to help Kent Myers.
And just to kind of reinforce what I was talking about a minute ago with the turnover margin, like in the three games that Utah State has won, they're +3 in the turnover margin. And in the eight games they've lost, they're -8.
Makes sense.
So, basically when Myers especially has taken care of the football, he's only thrown one interception in those three wins and seven in the games that they've lost. So that's something to keep an eye out for. If they can take care of the football, they should be able to hang around and make this game very uncomfortable for BYU.
So what's your prediction?
I think this is going to be a lot closer than a lot of people suspect. I still like BYU to win, but I would definitely take Utah State to cover. I think it'll probably end up being like a 3 or 4 point victory for the Cougars.
I think it'll be like 2 touchdowns, but still not cover, like 31-17 or something.
All right.
Because I think BYU can score just enough because if Williams is running the ball well, and Taysom Hill can move the ball as well on the ground. So final game, we'll spend about 2 minutes on this one because it's super late and because my computer sucks, but UMass at Hawaii. Time Warner Oceanic pay-per-view. So if you're on the island, spend your $50 to get this game, I guess. UMass is 2-9, Hawaii's 5-7. I guess technically if Hawaii's APR is high enough, they could get to a bowl game if things work out. but don't count on it. And we'll play this game one last time. Have you seen what the line is on this game?
Okay, I'm going to guess Hawaii. Oh, man. Hawaii by 3?
7.5.
Really?
7.5.
See, I think Massachusetts and kind of looking over their stats are a little more interesting than I think a lot of Hawaii fans might anticipate. You know, I think we may have actually talked about it at some point because I feel like they played someone else in conference. Maybe that was just my imagination.
They have not.
I might have been thinking about like Louisiana Monroe. But, you know, they have an okay running game. They got a guy, Marquise Young, who's, you know, having a nice season by independent standards. He's got about 800 yards, a few touchdowns, 4.4 yards per carry. What I think will be interesting to watch for is their quarterback, Andrew Ford, who's having a solid season, all things considered. Like
Have you seen his interceptions, man? Come on.
You know, 23-14 isn't great, but it's not bad, you know? What sticks out to me and what I'll be watching for in this game is the fact that he's been sacked 29 times. And, you know, the guy behind him, you know, Ross Comas, who I guess has pitched in a little bit here and there, he's been sacked 12 times. So that tells me that, you know, the Minutemen offensive line could be a huge weakness that Hawaii can exploit. And I'm interested in seeing whether they can do that because, you know, in last week's game, they were able to get to Zach Klein a few times. And on the whole, they've been kind of hit or miss. Like they're middle of the pack in the Mountain West. They only have 19 sacks. But the games that they've won are the games where they've really been able to get after the quarterback. You know, because in the 5 games they've won, they have the 14 sacks. And, you know, I look at this as kind of like very similar to the San Jose State game, where Hawaii won that one going away, and they took down Kenny Potter and Josh Love 6 times in that game. So I'm interested to see whether the defense can come to life and, you know, be that difference maker that has been mostly missing in action since that San Jose State game.
They should. And the one player, like, back to you, Matt, sticking on their offensive side, they have one player who's pretty good, possible NFL guy, their tight end Adam Brenneman. He came over from Penn State, so he has 7 TDs, leads the team receiving. If him and Andy Isabella, they combined for 110 catches, 111. So they have a couple of receivers. Like I was kind of joking, Ford, his interception rate's not good, but he's completing 60%, throwing over 2,300 yards, about 7 yards a pass. So they have some they have some threats in the passing game. But like you said, if they should be able to get to QB and make him pay. And I think well, I'm going to say Hawaii's going to cover that 7.5 and win by about 2 touchdowns.
I mean, just off the top of my head, I feel like this is another one that's going to be a little bit closer too. Like, I think I would probably take Massachusetts in the points, though I would take Hawaii to cover. I'd take Hawaii to win, rather. Sorry. Because, you know, not only what we were talking about, but on the flip side, too, you know, they've got a guy in the middle of the defense, Massachusetts does, Steve Casale, who's having, you know, for an inside linebacker, a pretty good year. You know, he has 6 pass breakups. He's forced a fumble, 2.5 sacks, 7 tackles for loss. And on the whole, I know that I've talked about Havoc rate in the past, but among their linebackers, you know, they rank in the top 30, which is better than you might expect. So I think that, you know, it's a question of whether this running game can get back on track because they got unexpectedly shut down last week against Fresno State. So can Paul Harris and Laka Laka and Diosemi St. Juste get back on track? I think if they do, then they probably win this game comfortably. But I think Massachusetts is going to give them a little more of a fight than a lot of people expect.
You could be right because UMass has played a couple. Like, they played BYU close last week for the first half. I think it was 14-9. They hung with 6 points within South Carolina. Who else they have? Like Tulane within a touchdown. So they've been close for a while. It's just that they don't have that long lasting second half. So I think Hawaii might just chip away at the end and win by about. I'm not saying they're going to blow them out, but I could see at least a 10-point victory for the Warriors.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll probably be within a touchdown. I'm going to say like maybe 30-24.
That can happen. Let's go with that. 6 points for you. I say 10 points. So let's wrap it up because I'm getting tired because it's late and we've had some issues tonight. So let's get this thing over with, okay?
Okay.
I don't think we need to add anything else. This show has been hour plus for sure because that first 25 minutes was gold, I think we'll say.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
We'll go silver. Is silver okay?
Yeah.
So that's our show for tonight. MWCConnection.com. Have a great Thanksgiving. If you're traveling, be safe. Listen to us to either annoy people in the backseat. Also, hey, real quick, our demographic apparently is more ladies than males. That's kind of odd. What's up with that?
They must enjoy your bias.
because the teams we hate are who their significant others like, maybe?
Maybe they're like the very quiet anti-Jeff Tedford crowd.
Ooh, please, we need that. We need a loud anti-Jeff Tedford crowd, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Or, well, maybe not, again, anti, but question Tedford crowd.
Yeah, there you go.
There we go. So that's our show for tonight, MWCConnection.com. We'll have another show later this week when we get to championship week where, I guess on my end, I'm picking Boise versus San Diego State, and you're Wyoming San Diego State? Is that correct?
It's going to be a really good matchup.
Well, whichever one it is, it'll be great. So thanks for listening, and like we always